From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk rules. If there's one thing we know about the English language, it's that there's a lot of rules and there are never, ever any exceptions. Right? Right? I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do every week, two people who learned all of the rules just so they would know how to break them, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, guys. I'm going to rush through the introductions today, I think, because we've got a lot to get to. Hello, Kathy Petras at your home in Armia. Hello, Ross Petras at your home in Toronto. Are the two of you ready to leap upon the words today?
Fletcher, we're always excited and ready to jump on words.
Speak for yourself, Ross. I'm not. No, I am. I really.
Maybe jump on the words and then flip right off, right?
Nice segue, Fletcher.
Thanks. I just thought of that.
You might say you're ever flipping.
Aha. Yes, I am. Tell me more.
We got an email. The other week, we had said we were interested in hearing about regionalisms or language changes you're aware of that we might not be. And we got an email from Judith in North Carolina. This was really interesting. She said, I moved to North Carolina after 50 years of being a California native. And what takes me aback is the quote, ever flip. And she said, y'all is great, all these things. Ever flip, you were is simply reversing the order of the word plus ever. Ever who, ever what, ever when, ever how, etc. She said, I've heard almost all the constructions flipped. Examples, ever when you get around to it, ever who wants to do it, ever how you want to handle it. She's like, what do you think? Any ideas about this?
We did a little research on it, and it seems to be an Appalachian dialect variant. And it's on the basis...
they said
Appalachian. I always say Appalachian, I know. I can't help it. As a kid, we always said Appalachian, so it still stuck with me. But anyway, it apparently is a Appalachian dialect variant, and it's on the same basis as the Germans who do the same sort of thing. And what interested at both of us is we used to go to, our mom was from Georgia, and we used to go to coastal Georgia a lot, and we never heard it. Mm-hmm. And then we checked the Dictionary of American Regional English, and they say these again are Ozarks or Appalachia. And they had ever how and ever when. Some thought is it's a Scottish-Irish element, and therefore, I mean, it is a Scottish-Irish element because they have the people who settled that area, and therefore it could come from... Scots, Irish, or Southern British, or General British. Well, we checked, and Kathy?
It seems, I mean, no one's sure, basically. I mean, it definitely seems like it's from the Scots, but they're not quite sure, where it came from. And they're saying that, I looked in the OED, we checked, and like, ever who was the 1900s, ever when, 1890s, and there are always places down south. They were not the earlier ones, the earliest evidence does not seem to be from anywhere but the southeast more, really.
No, and I also want to add, when we said the OED says 1890, obviously the usage was much, much earlier.
Oh, this is printed. This is published evidence. Yeah,
the printed episode, the printed actual thing. But it's a really interesting thing. We're debating, like, why did it happen? One thing that we kind of wonder about is people play with language a lot. And I wonder if it's just the answer is as simple as a while back, I don't know when, in Scotland or in America, someone just decided to switch it and then it caught on.
I got curious though, I mean, it's not really related, but Ross, you and I both say any who a lot. I know that's not ever who, but I got curious about any who. Do you say that, Fletcher? Do you say any who, or do you just, are you an anyhow person?
I'm not either one of those things.
Kathy, that's interesting. Where did you look up any who?
I did, because I say any who all the time, and I spell it, incidentally, A-N-Y-H-O-O. I don't spell it A-N-Y-W-H-O, which some people say. But again, that's another one I got curious about, because I'm any who. Any who, it's kind of irritating when I think about it.
I'm definitely an any way person. There's no anyhow
or
anywho.
I'm any who, which is like really horrible when
I'm just looking it up. It's a jocular appropriation. Yeah. The Scots and Ulster.
The Scots so, again. Yeah.
And the jocular part makes it me wonder about the ever witch and all of that, if it began as a sort of fun thing to say. Mm-hmm,
probably.
That's like really a tongue in cheek. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that.
So you think that maybe Everwho or Everwitch was sort of yucca?
Yeah.
Everwho.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, I think it makes sense.
Well, speaking of jocularity, we're going to move into the main,
topic,
which is silly rules or the unpredictability of the English language. In other words, rules that are rules sometimes and rules that don't make sense, well, some sense, but are rules anyway.
This one's going to blow your mind, Fletcher. Let's start with the obvious. I before E, except after C.
Hmm, sure, okay.
Okay, this is the rule that for many people, this is the only spelling rule they know. And we have to discuss this. Is it a very useful spelling rule, Fletcher?
I'd say it's moderately useful. I wouldn't say it's super useful because I think there are, you know, examples where E comes before I. But you know, I mean, there's a lot of I before E, right? Isn't there?
I agree, actually, because I must say I use it a lot of times when I'm spelling something. I do it in my head. I before E, etc. I do. I definitely do it. Mm-hmm. Don't you, Oz?
Yeah, but I think it's a little weird sometimes.
Oh. I have no brother again.
I do have to think. What I usually have to write the word weird out to be sure which way I should spell it. I'm never 100% sure until I actually write it down and say, oh, that IE looks really bizarre. Let me switch those around.
Yeah, weird is one of the ones I agree with you. I always have to think it. I don't automatically spell it correctly. Definitely not. I think. I mean, way I spell all the time correctly. Neighbor. I mean, you know, those I can do, but no.
Here's where it's actually a little more useful for me is not so much the always put the I before the E, but rather when it's after a C, I'm usually flipping it, E-I.
Right, because except after C.
Except after C is actually the more useful part of that to me.
Right.
Absolutely.
I before E, except after C. That's right.
Or when sounded as A, as in neighbor and way. But seizure and C's do what they please.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we even have a longer version here. Kath, why don't we do the whole version here?
Well, I just want to say before we do that, Ross, that whole long version, that one we just did, was from the 1880 Rules for English Spelling by Ebenezer Cobham Brewer, which is a fabulous name. And that was like one of those things where it was like the Manual of English Spelling. It was like when you had to establish these rules. So that's where you got that mnemonic.
Yeah, but at the point you have to call up Homer and have him recite an epic poem for you to know how to spell a word.
That's the problem with a lot of these rules. I do what you do, Fletcher. I have to look at it and see. And I don't really think of the rule that much. I think the rule back, actually, interestingly enough, is just I before E with a bunch of exceptions is how I think of the rule.
The except after C really helps me.
Yeah.
I don't think I use this rule that much. But we have a long, long rule.
Merriam-Webster, they call it their re-mnemonic, which I think is brilliant. Ross, you want to start?
Okay, I before E, except after C.
Or when sounded as A, as in neighbor and way.
Unless the C is part of a sh sound, as in glacier.
Or it appears in comparatives and superlatives, like fancier.
And also except when the vowels are sounded as E, as in C's.
Or as I, as in height.
Or also in ing inflections and ending in E, as in queuing.
Or in compound words, as in albeit.
Or occasionally in technical words with strong etymological links to their parent languages, as in cuneiform.
Or in other numerous and random exceptions, such as science, forfeit, and weird.
What a wonderfully useful rule. I think we should post this up.
I must say, though, I got to give kudos to Merriam-Webster for that little thing, although I wish they had made it rhyme. I can't help it.
It could have made it snappier, definitely.
Yeah, I think we should work on this, Ross.
I think we should.
But it is enough to make your brain really go crazy, I think. I mean, I'm looking at the thing. Dictionary of Modern English Usage says, don't pay attention to I before E. Fowler, that we've talked about a lot, says it's very useful. Then you go back and forth. It's like how much is useful and how much isn't, you know?
Most spelling, though, I think for as you get really into the language, and, you know, we all are, obviously, because we're native English speakers. But I think what does tend to happen is you just know the spelling or you don't know that. It looks like Fletcher said, it looks right or it doesn't look right.
Mm.
And with Grammarly and all of those programs now, it makes it a little bit easier, too, because you get that underline and you go, you know, zip it the right way.
Well, it's supposed to be helpful, and I don't find this helpful. They say an easy way to remember this, I before E, subrule, is if it comes to English from French, like receive, perceive, deceive, deceit, conceit, mm-hmm. deceit, it is I before E except after C. But the exceptions seem to have roots in Old English, eight, way, neighbor, slay, weird. But how many of us are going to sit there and go, I think this word's from the Old French, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah.
Right?
I know. I sort of like that, actually. I didn't know that, Kath. You're right, though. I kind of like it because you got to go.
It doesn't help me at all. All right. Never mind then. Let's move on, Ross.
Okay. Here we have another rule, the silent E rule. Words ending in E in English, the E is not pronounced, as in heave, force, rate, plane, fate. We know all of those words.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we ask a good rule, isn't it? You don't pronounce the E.
Totally.
Or is it? Let's throw a few words out there. Kath, you want to?
Fletcher, can you think of words in the English language that we use that end in an E and you do pronounce it?
Well, sort of. We've often talked about fort, F-O-R-T-E, and people pronounce it forte. So there's
Thank
one kind
you.
Of.
Okay, let's try a couple. When you were a kid, or a lot of people, I'm not going to say you did or didn't.
Your skin looks very nice, Fletcher. Let's just start
yes,
with that.
Yes, but when you're a kid, you have a certain skin you. Problem, which is called?
Acne.
Right.
Uh-huh. Or close to that, the top of something, or the company that used to supply Wile E. Coyote is Acme.
Right.
Yeah, Acme, and did you know, right.
Did you know that both of these come from a misreading in Latin from the Greek? Did you know that or not?
Both words?
Now, isn't that an interesting point? The Greek word is akmas, which is the top, and the accusative plural is acme, point. And then the Latins did acne, and they changed it in acme.
Huh.
So they blew it.
That's the epitome of a good explanation,
uh-huh.
Ross.
The epitome. Uh-huh.
The epitome. Okay, now, but the only thing that we're doing these words, these all are borrow words, or they're from the Greek or Latin.
Yeah.
Right? Are there any that aren't pronouncing the E at the end?
Well, I can think of one from the Japanese.
Karaoke?
Oh, good.
Good. That's one more, though. I didn't think of that one. I'm thinking of another one. Karate.
Oh, karate.
Saki?
Saki.
Yes. Good, Fletcher.
But that, again, we go back to these are all loan words, really.
Yeah, they are.
Are there any that we can think of? Because I'm not, this is not a trick question. I'm actually asking. Is there any you can think of that come from like the old, the Anglo side of things that end in an E and that are not like?
I can't think of any. So basically, the rule is pretty good. Except with, I mean, the problem with English, or the good thing about English, is it gets a lot of words from different languages. And it leaves a lot of times the old pronunciation, the old spelling. But I can't, we have recipe, but that's obviously, you know, French Latin. Apostrophe is Greek. Sesame, actually, it's from the Assyrian Shamash Shamu. But
well,
whatever,
of course.
It
doesn't. I know. Why repeat the obvious?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to the sub-rule about silent E. This is the rule. If you add a silent E to the end of a word with just one consonant as the last letter, the vowel in the middle of the word changes its sound to a mm-hmm. long vowel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, take the word rat. Add an E. How's it pronounced?
Rate.
Bat.
Bait.
Mop.
Mope.
Nap.
Nape.
Four.
Four.
Ha ha! We have tricked you there.
Okay, this is another rule here. It's the drop the silent E. If the base word ends in silent E and you add a vowel suffix,
mm-hmm.
You usually drop the E from the base word before adding the suffix. That sounds complicated, but let's put it in simple words. Rate. Now you want to add ing. What do you do?
Drop the E and add the ing. Rating. And it stays long. Right. It stays long. It's not ratting all of a sudden.
Right. Exactly. Force. Forcing. Drop the E. Trace. Tracing. Now, can you think of an exception to this rule?
This is really annoying.
Well, we mentioned earlier, I think, queuing.
Very good.
Which is a lot of vowels in a row, isn't it? Q-U-E-U-I-N-G.
Yep.
As a rabid Scrabble player, I love that word.
This one got me too. Singe is interesting.
Oh, singe. Oh, because otherwise it would be singing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You don't think about that.
But then write out singeing, and singeing looks really weird.
Mm-hmm. It's very strange.
It's funny because the rule, you see the power of the rule, because I just wrote out singeing, and it looks horrible.
Well, that's the other thing, though. It's like going back to the rules, dropping the E, blah-de-blah. You're taking, adding an A-B-L-E or O-U-S, and it completely changes it. You've got courageous, you keep the E. It's courage plus us, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
What's something with A-B-L-E?
Well, traceable. Traceable.
Traceable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you have the trace and you add the able.
No, it's weird. And then sometimes even with the dropping of the E with consonants, it's different too. In English, a judge made a judgment. How would you spell that, Fletcher?
Well, I would spell it without the E, but I do know that either one is correct, isn't it?
I spell it with the E.
I tend to too, but that's English usually.
Is it?
No, actually, though, I think it's spreading, Russ. I think that you're seeing more and more of judgment with the E, which I prefer. I always hated it without the E. It bothers me. It looks unbalanced, you know?
I agree with you, Kathy. I do too, but I just typed it in here on the computer, which has American spelling, and it marks it as wrong.
I kind of go the other way. I think it kind of looks messy with the E in the middle.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. So, yeah, I'm doing it the British way, definitely. Everybody's saying, like, it's unstandard, non-standard.
Okay, now let's move on. Here's what we're going to just say here. I'm going to say first the words, and then you'll try to get the rule. I'm going to say, here I am. What's the contraction of I am?
Oh.
What would you say?
I'm.
Right. I'm here.
I'm here.
Right?
Uh-huh. You wouldn't say here I'm.
You can't say it. Wow. You can't usually contract the main verb if it's the last word in a sentence. But if you put not in there, you can. Because the not isn't the verb there. I don't. I do. Now, let's go back to this. Kathy, you were very eloquent on this one. But so we cannot say I amped, can we?
I amn't. It's pronounced amn't, Ross, because I use it.
Thank you, Catherine.
I feel very strongly about this.
Yes, this is Kathy's big thing.
This is the hill I'm going to die on. I think we should use amn't. I don't understand. I say I don't. Do you do that? No, I don't. I are you this? I am. No, I amn't. Are you tired? No, I amn't tired. I like it. I think it's mm-hmm. great. I think that we should use amn't. And I always assumed it was one of those things that I made up in my own very small, weird head. But it's not. Amn't was considered proper until the early 19th century. So I'm going back in time and bringing it with me. I am. Why not? I amn't. You hungry? Nah, I amn't. What do you think? No.
Do you know why it fell out of favor?
Well, there's some thought that it was Dickens who actually did it.
Yeah, and I don't like Dickens anymore either. I want that on the record as well.
But they're wondering if, I mean, there's no real, we can't be sure, but we're partly wondering if when Dickens was sort of mimicking the London Cockney dialect, that people began to associate the word only with lower class Brits.
Hmm.
And then middle-class people decided they wanted to speak much more correctly. They did not want to be, you know, tied with these people, so they switched out of it. That is one of the big thoughts about this, which is really interesting.
Which is so strange. Well, the other thing that really got me looking into this was amn't, that we had amn't, which a good word, and then it was replaced first by ain't.
Right,
like, really?
Right.
So you go from amn't to ain't, then aren't. So it was like, Amn't I? Ain't I? Aren't I?
And then the non-stigmatized is are not, is aren't, which is now the classic usage of what's seen as correct. But when you get down to it, ain't that bad,
right.
Really.
Right.
I like ain't too. As a kid, though, remember, we were like, it was drummed in. I don't really remember anyone saying ain't, because it was like, so, no, you never say ain't.
Oh, I know. Sure. That was like a crime against, I mean, that was seen as a crime when we were kids. I remember.
Yeah, it was a crime against humanity, for God's sake. It's like, whoa, my God, he said ain't. You know, yeah. Now, I don't get it. But I always thought ain't was are not. I didn't realize ain't was am not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it never occurred to me. Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna do another one, which is a nice catchy one. I always like this rule. Unfortunately, we have problems with it, but when two vowels go walking, the first one does the talking. Yeah. I always love that.
Yeah.
What does it mean first? Let's describe what it means.
Right. So if you've got a word that has two vowels right next to each other in the middle, then the first vowel is the sound that you make.
Correct.
So S-E-A is pronounced as?
C, right, because E
right.
is the, yeah. And so just like would, right? O-U, mm-hmm. sounds like an O, oh, wait a minute.
Oh.
As opposed to wood.
Yeah, so this doesn't really seem to be the case all that much. I suppose it is plenty of times, but.
Well, here's a fun fact. This rule is only true about 45% of the time, or actually less than 36% if you just focus on the 2,000 most frequently used words.
That's not very often.
55% yeah. of the time, the rule is false.
Heck of a rule that you got there.
Yeah.
I got to just say something. I'm fascinated with the fact that someone actually went through and figured out like the amount
great.
Of time it was correct and it wasn't. You know what I mean?
I love that there are people who do that. That's so cool.
I know. So what? Like, let's see if we can get someone's. Let's try. It should be easy to get 55% of the words that don't do it. Let's do so quickly.
Well, C's. We talked about C's earlier, right? S-I-E-Z-E?
S-E-I.
Wait, did I spell it wrong?
Yeah, you yes. spelled it wrong. Actually, that first vowel was talking.
Yeah. Wasn't talking loud enough for Fletcher, though, I don't think. I can think of one right now. Friend. It's not friend.
Well, friend.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. It's I. I'm having problems with the I's and the E's now, guys.
Yeah, me too. Go back to earlier.
Laugh. No, laugh. The A.
Well, that's laugh. The thing is that a lot of times when you have two vowels together, they sort of talk together, right? You end up with a different sound entirely.
Precisely.
Because laugh, you don't say laif, but you also don't say loof.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
It's funny. I was thinking about this morning, so it's funny that we brought this up. There's an actor named Moon Bloodgood. Her first name is Moon.
Ooh.
Her last name is Bloodgood. But you've got double O.
Wow.
You've got a double O three different times, and all three of them have different
are
sounds.
Are different.
Right? Ooh.
That's very
great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we followed this rule, her name would be Moan.
Moan Blood Goad.
Yeah.
It's not really euphonious, is it? It doesn't quite work.
No.
Now, this is a toughie because I have issues with how you really pronounce the vowels. Because is the assumption that the vowel that's doing the talking is a long vowel?
I think so. I mean, I always assumed mm-hmm. that, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the rule, it would be. Yeah.
But obviously, why does it matter if it's only true 36% of the time or whatever anyway?
Yeah, you know what? I say we scrap this rule. It's very snappy.
I think we throw
sounding,
this rule away.
But I'm done with it. It's gone.
Here's a rule that we pretty much do follow all the time. I'm just going to throw this in as a codicil because it doesn't really fit the theme here. When there's a double T consonant, how do we pronounce it?
Give me an example.
L-I-T-T-L-E.
Little.
Little? Oh, like it sounds like a D sound?
Yeah, we all do that.
They don't all. Little. I mean, quitting. Oh, I guess that is kind of a D sound too, isn't it? Quitting.
Quitting.
Yeah, quitting.
Yeah,
I can't think of
exceptions?
Any.
Well, an exception probably is if you're British, because I've been made fun of personally by a lot of British people for a lot. I've been made fun of by some British people for using the D sound
really...
for using the D sound when their T's.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
I must admit, because Brits do pronounce it. I'm thinking of like my friends that are all Brits. Yeah. There's much more of a little. literally.
Although I always hear, a lot of times I hear a non-deep as a glottal stop.
Yeah, little.
Little.
That's different. That's like sort of the Cockney thing. Bottle. Bottle.
How do you say B-U-T-T-O-N?
Button. Yeah, that's got the glottal stop in there too. Button.
Button. We don't say with a D, button.
Yeah, button.
No, you're right.
We don't say button. We don't say button either. It's glottal stop. That's interesting, though. So in some cases, we do glottal stops. In others, we do double D. But none of us are doing a double T.
Okay, wait a minute. How do you... Okay, you have a bad A-T-T-I-T-U-D-E. Say that.
Attitude? Attitude. Attitude. Yeah. Still a D.
Attitude. Okay. Attitude.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait. I think I got one. He, A-T-T-A-C-K-E-D, the ball.
Attacked.
That's definitely attacked. Yeah.
T. I say T.
Yeah.
Maybe if there's a vowel first followed by the double T, do we do it as a T?
I think we do, because, okay, wait a minute. Let's go up to the A-T-T-I-C.
Attic.
Attic.
Now
yeah.
It's a D.
That's really interesting, the differences.
I'm uttering this. It's a D. It's almost always a D.
Attack, though, is different.
I wonder why. You don't say a DAC.
No, a DAC. No, it's attack.
Well, attach. Maybe it says A-T-T. Hold it. Things that start with A-T-T.
Okay.
That's the key. Attack, attend, attach, attain, attire. All of those.
You're right. I don't say a dire. Yeah, you're right.
But think about the emphasis, like where the stress lies. It's not on the first syllable with attach and attack, right? Does that have something to do with
second.
It?
No, it's the second. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Right. Good point.
Ytterbium. Isn't YTT? Isn't
I
that
often
an element?
Use that word.
Right? Yeah.
But again, we go back to the whole, it really interests me because a long time ago when I started to learn languages, I would like look at some of these rules for different languages and try to apply them. Mm. And I basically found the rules are kind of good for people who already know the language really well and are sort of curious why they're doing that. But in all of these cases, most of it is instinctive. And that really interests me. But the rule itself, to learn the rule itself, strikes me as relatively useless. We know the rules in our head.
Well, I go back to, though, I hate to say it, I before E except after C, I think is a little helpful on the whole. Because mm-hmm. I don't know why it is, because I'm actually a really good speller, much like Fletcher, who we know is an exceptional speller. And I do have to think twice about receive and seize.
Yeah, it's a little helpful, emphasis on a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
New from The Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.